Yes, I'm Indigenous. I'm very, very, very humbled at being first Indigenous American woman, but I serve everybody. You know, I'm a servant leader. That's my, you know, if somebody had to define my style of leadership, I'm a servant leader. So I bottom up and you humbly walk alongside the people, not in front of them. And that's kind of where I'm at. And, you know, I teach leadership at Leech Lake Tribal College. My doctorate's going to be in leadership. So I get to actually use all of the theory I learned.
That is Audrey Thayer. She is a newly sworn in Bemidji City Council member. As you just heard her say, she's the first Indigenous woman to ever serve on the Bemidji City Council. She's only the seventh woman to take a seat on the council. I spoke with her recently about her political journey, the experiences that led her to use her voice for change, the importance of diversity at the policymaking table, and what she hopes to accomplish in the next 4 years.
Well, you haven't been obviously on city council before, but have you?
I ran twice before, so I know exactly. And I wrote Beltrami County District 5 against Jack Frost. I only lost by maybe 150, maybe 200 votes, very small amount compared to the amount of people that voted. I still feel I lost because of his name. You know, if you didn't know Audrey Thayer, you know Jack Frost. Right.
So that was for county commissioner because he was.
That was a big race. It was the very first one I'd ever ran, and I was too close to the Democratic Party. It's a nonpartisan race, and you know, when you're first time out, you don't really know. And then the second time out, my heart wasn't in it. Put my name in because people asked me to, and I didn't have the. I was still recovering from loss of my son, but I've been around the political arena, you know, traveled with Ralph Nader two times and two campaigns with Winona Duke. So I know what it's like federally. And I learned a lot about politics and handshaking and giving major speeches on a national level. And of course, I adored Ralph Nader. I was active with the Greens, co-started that organization way back. And we became the second largest Green Party organization in the state of Minnesota during Ken Pintel's governor run. After that, I was with ACLU, so then can't be in any political party. You can't even breathe politics, so other non-issues, and I liked it. I found that I was better off in getting things done by focusing on issues and working with people from all parties rather than just one. So that has been my stance, and that is how I operate, and so then I've had already, you know, I've only been, you know, not even a month here. What is today? I've been in a month now. Month and 4 days. But I've had people say, well, how come you're talking to Republicans? And I said, well, how come I'm not? You're running some of the businesses and I'm on the Downtown Business Association. Now I've got to talk to them. Well, those landlords are Republican. How am I going to get them to consider changing rent and policies, you know, unless I have dialogue and a relationship with them.
You were just mentioning that when you were working for the ACLU, that's when you were inspired to really pull back from having any political leanings so that you could fulfill your job duties best. But ACLU seems like a pretty interesting place to be. What did that position teach you?
I understood the court systems from that. They're a mess. And I also understood that any human being with a high amount of intelligence would have a very difficult time in the court process because it's just a very cumbersome, designed, negotiated kind of piece. And of course, you know, the high percentages of people that were incarcerated, we were able to identify repeating of families. So that was the Pandora's box. It means education. And it means understanding and rebuilding and promoting and talking about those things we don't want to talk about, you know, the uglies in our communities and all communities. And that is what I learned from that experience and to learn to love people from everywhere. And I think that was the biggest one for me. So, and then I was said, where are the front lines? And the front lines were after the job closed, it was due to be there only 10 years. When I knew it was coming, I thought, and I was already teaching part-time over at Leech Lake. And they, of course, as soon as I was laid off, they gave me a full-time job. And I've been at Leech Lake since. But that's the front lines for me. So I'm in there empowering students to make a difference.
That is Audrey Thayer. She is a leadership professor at Leech Lake Tribal College. She's also the first Indigenous woman to serve as a Bemidji City Council member. She's been in her post for just a few weeks now. And her professional and life experiences have given her a unique perspective on the world that lends itself well to serving in a community like Bemidji.
My mom is from White Earth Reservation. She was a full blood from White Earth. World War II, she was, my mom, grandma was relocated to Chicago during Indian relocation. And my dad was fast-tracked into the military. He was from Germany. And he came in through Canada. His folks died. They were up in Milk River, Alberta, Canada. And his folks died hard winter. He was moved down to Acton, Minnesota. So they were both Minnesotans. And he was in the Navy. So Great Lakes Naval Pier was there, base. Mm-hmm. And on Friday nights, the Navy guys would, like, you know, had little goodies, you know, nylons and cool things that you couldn't get during World War II. And the women weren't allowed in the bars, the Native women, without escort. That was the law. So here's young women who have been relocated to assimilate, who had their padus, you know, from the of the 40s, you know, with a jitterbugging, and they couldn't jitterbug. So, but it only took one white male that could take in as many Indian women. So there were some great pictures of my mom and all her cousins with my dad sitting there. Dad was an old German farmer who spoke German and broke in English and became a citizen by serving. So he felt like he was doing the right thing, and he wasn't really liked by a lot of the other military, you know, because he was German, and it was a bad feeling in his country about Germans anyway. Huh. So the whole history of Germans. So he met my mom, and then they married in 45, and he went back to the reservation with my mom, and they wouldn't let him live there because he was white.
So he felt it on the other side, you know? Yep.
So he took her down to Acton, Minnesota to the German community. She wasn't German. So it was, my dad got angry, you know, and said, this isn't okay. I've lived a life of not being, you know, not liked because I'm German, and I'm going to move on. So he took my mom and 13 brothers and sisters and my over to Wisconsin on a small farm. So that's my connections to Wisconsin. So I was on a small farm as I was young. It was almost communal farm. Yeah, and then we moved down to Milwaukee because, farming was falling out. And we had to, my dad went to Everroot to break union in there. And in Milwaukee. And that's why I got down to Milwaukee. So I had been in eighth grade then.
So fascinating and heartbreaking how your folks were sort of turned away from each of their own cultural communities because of the cross-cultural nature of their marriage.
Yeah. But I'm home. This is where my family's from. And I've been here 30 years now, so...
When did you realize that you really wanted to use your voice to make change as a woman, as an Indigenous woman, as somebody who understood firsthand the complexities of being a biracial, bicultural person?
18, because I had to stand in a welfare line for EBT. I was, you know, having my first daughter. I raised 8 children. So my first daughter, and I had to ask for assistance, and I didn't have family support. And I was treated badly. And that was my first big activism stuff, was welfare reform. And I remember having my beat up Falcon with blankets over and welfare mamas and the babies inside. And we were going down the parade at West Bend, Wisconsin. But it was probably a little earlier because my dad was a union organizer. So I learned a lot about unions in small businesses. And then I marched with Father Grappi in Milwaukee. And I hadn't been 16. That was during the time of the Watts and Milwaukee Wooden Fire, Chicago. And that was the, you know, the big burn of race relations back then. And I remember walking with him in a very safe way, but over the longest bridge in the world between Poland and Africa in Milwaukee. That's what they used to call it. Because all the Polish and lived south Milwaukee and the Black community lived north. And so, you know, very young, not knowing, but it was all kind of exciting then, you know, you're young and you don't really, really understand what you're doing until a little later that you're standing up.
That's Audrey Thayer. She is the first Indigenous woman to serve on the Bemidji City Council, and we are talking about her life. Audrey, you've lived a life that has been steeped in diversity. I wondered if you could talk about the importance of having a diverse group of people at the policymaking table.
Diversity is defined in many ways. It has to do with women, with the disabled. It has to do with cultures of people who think differently. So you could have a group of non-natives who culturally think different than the mainstream and not brought to the table because they don't fit that criteria of what the Western world viewpoint is of who should have office, who should be qualified to lead people. And of course, women have stayed in there all along, and I've identified with women of all cultures simply on that basis that we've been held back. Well, you can imagine, you know, that this community in this area, many people have assumed, and I'm privileged, let me make that clear. I'm light skinned, and that allows me privilege as well as an Indigenous person, but I've lived in an Indian community all, you know, since 18. So that's the only thing I know is that cultural group. So the importance of diversity at the table is that broadness of ideals, of thought, of inclusion, because we have become very inclusive of fear and change. Let's leave things as they are because we don't really know what it'll be like if we, you know, create something different. We also have been a country of perceptions of people with different colored skin are different than us and not as educated as us. And the history is because it was not afforded to everybody. You know, it was white male property owners in the beginning. So diversity, you know, this is a beautiful city. And this area is beautiful, pristine. We're very progressive in the city of Bemidji. We're not on the outskirts, you know, because they're still afraid of change. And then we have to tie in the money issue. Mm-hmm. We have to tie in the fact that people, because of the Western world viewpoint and our economy based on capitalism, you've got to have a lot to be somebody. You know, and you and I both hang around with people that believe differently. You know, that's a whole cultural mindset that doesn't fit in the narrative of this country. Mm-hmm. You know, to live sustainably. What's that? You know, and so you know, that is what diversity brings. Diversity brings such a wide array of thought from different perspectives instead of all the same.
Yeah.
So we need that. Bemidji needs that. We need to move forward. We need to be a sustainable city, leading in sustainability. We're a big city, even though we're not big by numbers. We're a big city. When you look at we have a huge Sanford Center, the head of the Mississippi. We have three large reservations around us. We are unique. And we could make something of that if we would just move out of this mindset of, you know, not accepting those who are different.
Speaking of different, you had a unique swearing-in ceremony.
When I was sworn in, it was the first time they had a pipe carrier at a city council. We smudged the building, but we also managed to talk to the council and the prayers, and they had to hold up the council meeting. They've never done that. They've not had anything like that before. But, you know, that's okay. So I was sworn in the 4th. So I've got 1, 2, 3. I think I'm on my 4th meeting, 5th meeting now.
What do you hope to accomplish?
Work on sustainability. Obviously, making sure that Indigenous people, Indigenous Americans, Blacks, anybody who's unheard, women, disabled, are feeling heard in community. I volunteered myself to the homeless committee. Obviously, you know, you have to worry about your wards first. The central school is an issue right now because of the education having some stuff going on with the referendum not passing. And community has said that they have issues with law enforcement. So the Police Advisory Commission will be starting to, I think we have a work group at the end of this month. So we're moving forward with that. Housing, that'll be an interesting thing. We have a housing development thing that's not affordable housing. It's for middle-class housing that's coming in. We have to evaluate how we're going to do the housing. So I'm starting relationships with the Housing Property Owners Consortium. So sustainability housing, obviously the budget, we've got a $305,000 COVID dollars coming in for Sanford. So that'll hold us for a year, but we have a big elephant there that's, you know, people can't use. And most importantly, now we have wellness donation dollars coming in from Sanford for a wellness center. And I'd rather, you know, I can't use the BSU Rec Center. It's too expensive and most families cannot. We definitely need to have something for our community. So there's a lot of little projects going on here, working, you know, educating community, building communities, engaging people, you know, and then you have to put the fires out.
That is Audrey Thayer. She is Bemidji's first female Indigenous City Council member. She's a professor of leadership at Leech Lake Tribal College. She is 69 years old, and she has been making change since she was 16. I'm Katie Carter. This is Area Voices. Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the citizens of Minnesota.
Diversity brings such a wide array of thought from different perspectives instead of all the same.